G'day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. For the first time, we got a nice little YouTube simulcast going here, along with the live streams at American Freedom Radio. It's new technology, testing it all up. Unfortunately, my guest, who was scheduled today, Chris Leach, from the New Zealand Democrats for Social Credit, has not turned up to the show, but I do have some articles and things of that nature to run through. And just while I'm getting those up in the background here, I just wanted to give people a wee bit of information about what I've been doing this last month. You may have noticed I haven't been putting up much new content or things of that nature. Sorry about that. There's a mouse just fell off my little stand here. So my band, The Twist, some of you might have noticed previously as the Pākehāchis, a mixture of a Pākehā and a Mariachi. We've been signed to E4 Records, a little record company here in Auckland, and we've been practicing on our songs and trialing new methodologies and technology and that kind of thing to sort of try and get the best sound we can and the more bang for the buck out of the band. And so it's a lot of responsibility that I've taken on there on that front, as well as the Aotearoa Legalized Cannabis Party, where I've taken over their web admin and that kind of thing. So it's been a busy month, even though I haven't been doing shows and stuff like that on American Freedom Radio. And the reason why we're doing this live stream today is because I've been made the executive producer, co-executive producer of American Freedom Radio by the owner, Danny Romero. And this is our first test of the new live streaming technology. And what we want to do is we want to have all the hosts of American Freedom Radio be able to do this kind of thing with the guests, you know, be able to do the live streams and say hello to everybody. And we've had got three people in the chat room there already: Liz, Colonel Ruby, and Julie. So hi guys, thank you very much for tuning in and listening. So this is the first live stream for American Freedom Radio and the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and I hope this this new format continues and hopefully will impress. So the first thing that we're going to show you here is our new hotkey system. So I'm just going to flip the hotkey here, and now you can see the articles that I've got up here for us. So first article here: National Party leader Simon Bridges sets out alternative bill on medicinal cannabis. Now, of course, these are a little bit of older articles, and they are mostly cannabis related. And then, well, this is the stuff that we're going to try and go through this first hour here, because a lot of people are really, really interested in this issue. Myself, it's a very personal issue for me, because I got busted when I was a much younger man, after I'd just turned 19 or just turned 20. And I was going to go to jail for up to 8 years. They caught me 13 grams of cannabis for sale, you know. And that's when my complex post-traumatic stress disorder really started. I had my first panic attack in the police cells. The police said that I'd sold $48,000 of cannabis. They caught me with 13 grams, you know. It's a messed up system based on lies, and the people that enforce the system have to lie in order to do so effectively. And this victimizes and traumatizes untold amounts of particularly young men. And as I discovered later on in university, when I was doing an essay about cannabis, I asked a police officer who was walking around what he's trained to look for when they're trying to bust people for cannabis, without batting an eye: groups of males under the age of 25. That's scary, really, because it shows a utter bias and essentially a predatory nature. Let's make no bones about it. If you're going after people who can't defend themselves, who don't have the resources or the mental faculty or the experience to defend their rights, who don't know their rights and that kind of thing. And largely young men fall into this category, especially groups of young men who are out having a smoke. They don't know how to defend themselves against cops. They don't know how to do it safely so that they won't get busted and that kind of thing. They're easy prey, essentially, and hence the predatory nature of it. Now, supplementary to the predatory nature of the laws regarding cannabis is the fact that you've got law changes that are being proposed by parties that, you know, could conceivably have conflicts of interest and or have been supporting prohibition all this time and don't really have much credibility on the issue to speak of regardless. You know what I'm saying? And it turns out that, of course, a lot of these medicinal bills, you know, without even looking at them, just seeing who's presenting them, and immediately the suspicion goes up. So what we're going to try and do is play this particular track for you here, and this is a second part of our technological advances here, is we have to change the audio sequences. So you won't be able to hear me for a second while we watch this video. And I believe there may be an ad or something of that nature there in the beginning of it. Let's just play that. No, it's good. It seems to be fine. So give me 1 second, ladies and gentlemen. Let's just allow you to hear this little piece of audio that we've got here. La-da-da-da-da. All right, there we go.
We believe New Zealanders deserve greater access to high-quality medicinal cannabis products to ease their suffering, but we also believe we have to have the right regulatory and legislative controls in place. The government's bill utterly fails to meet both of those tests. National has today lodged a members' bill to implement a comprehensive medicinal cannabis regime that would widen the access to medicinal cannabis and license high-quality domestic production. We think it will improve the lives of people who are suffering and ensure that the right controls and processes are in place. And I think what it shows is that National is determined to be a very constructive opposition, working on new ideas and new policies, and this bill really does demonstrate that. And I encourage the government to implement our comprehensive reforms to ensure New Zealanders in need can access high-quality medicinal cannabis products to ease their suffering.
Okay, and we're back. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. It does take a second to trade in between these particular things. So that's the National's leader, Simon Bridges. And he's got a long, sad history, so I won't go into that. Now, here's the thing. He talked about high quality medical status, and I apologize about halfway through that particular thing. I'd forgotten to switch the camera angle to show the him actually speaking there. So it's new. I've just got to get into the habit. So what he was talking about was high quality medicinal products for domestic production, right? And essentially what he's saying is, or at least my BS filter when it comes to political speak sort of translates it into, what we want is basically a private monopoly, preferably on the part of our corporate mates, and we want to make sure that people can't really grow their own unless it's an absolute emergency circumstance that will suffer bad PR if we don't give them that kind of thing. In terms of recreational, nah, we'll still keep busting people left, right, and center. In terms of green fairies, nah, we'll keep busting them left, right, and center. Nah. She'll be right. We just want big corporate monopolies to have all of the stuff absolutely controlled with a very stringent framework and stuff like that for this plant that hasn't killed anybody in 10,000 years that anybody can grow for up to 50,000 users. So yeah, it's kind of BS language for a start here. Now they talk about the broadness of their bill, and to me, broadness of legislation, especially when they're not specific about it, means authoritarianism, more or less, greater controls, greater restrictions, blah, 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 blah. And it's all the same kind of BS. And yes, I agree, Tanel, the Democrats of Social Critics would have been interesting. And indeed, I'll try and cover a bit of that, those ideas as we go through the broadcast. Now, let's see if we go through this article, how specific they actually get when it comes to this particular thingy. So, National leader Simon Bridges has announced the details of a bill which would allow medicinal cannabis products to be treated like any other medicines and available from the chemist. All right, so right there, if it's just available from a chemist, you know, thin end of the wedge maybe. It would be available on the recommendation of a doctor or nurse practitioner who would authorize a photo ID card for medicinal cannabis. All right, so they trialed this in California, and then people just started getting any old doctor to prescribe them anything for any reason. And then they started getting their medicinal cannabis for just, you know, recreational purposes. So, yeah, built-in BS there. Manufacturing would come under strict licensing conditions with standards like other medicines. Yeah. Well, the thing is, cannabis isn't like other medicines because, unlike all the other medicines, you can't die from it. New Zealanders deserve greater access to high-quality medicinal cannabis products that ease their suffering, but we must have the right regulatory and legislative controls in place, Bridges said. Okay, so here's the thing. We want to have the right stuff to ease your suffering, which means we don't want to ease your suffering now when it would be convenient and might make your life livable and be able to do normal things like get up out of your chair and walk to the kitchen to make yourself a cup of tea and have that process take a reasonable amount of time as opposed to 20 minutes because you have to break every couple of steps to catch your breath and howl in the horrible pain that is coursing through every single fiber of your muscles. All right. See, this is the kind of thing that these people with their legislative framework regulations don't quite understand, is that that doesn't help somebody who is suffering in pain right now, has been suffering in pain for many years while you talk about this bullshit. Okay. That's just my take on it, of course. The government's bill utterly fails to meet both those tests, so we will vote against it, he said. Okay, so basically, you're going to vote against a really crappy cannabis bill because you want to have another crappy cannabis bill that still doesn't go far enough anyway. You know, so you're going to vote against it so that people who are suffering right now, people who are dying right now, have zero chance of getting access to legal cannabis as opposed to like 5% chance that they would under their bill. Okay, so as opposed to just get it through and then we'll just improve it later on, maybe step by step incrementalism. Isn't that what you globalist scumbags are all about? One little step at a time. But of course, it's never steps towards freedom. It's never steps towards justice. It's never steps towards people actually living a life without excruciating pain. It's always steps towards self-gratification, steps towards more authoritarianism, steps away from a better society. It included only minor improvements to how cannabidiol products were treated, which the previous national government had already facilitated. Under National's bill, the products would be available as oil, tablets, or under-the-tongue sprays, but not as loose-leafed cannabis. All right, so basically, you need to have a manufacturing process so that you can't just do it by yourself or grow your own plants and things like that. Precisely as I said, it would only be manufactured products by monopolistic companies that no doubt, I'm only assuming here because I'm very cynical, but the thing is, because politicians, particularly psychopathic politicians, are also very cynical, my cynical assumptions often have a rather remarkable degree of accuracy, should we say. Now, the bill is in the name of Whangarei MP and Dr. Shane Reite, and interestingly enough, Whangarei is where Chris Leach from the Democrats for Social Credit is standing, you know, so that would have been interesting to have him on today. Who has been on the Health Select Committee considering the government bill? Now, also, what's interesting about Health Select Committees, and you'll have these kind of things in every kind of country, you know, whatever they have is their own particular flavor of the New World Order global government, but basically it works like this. You know what's a really brilliant idea? Introduce a piece of legislation that doesn't go far enough and is basically pointless. Ask what everybody's opinion is. Ignore all the opinions we don't like, but say that, hey, at least we listen to them, and then implement the crappy legislation that you want anyway, maybe with a tiny, minor couple of changes. And essentially what you do is you waste extraordinary amounts of time. You have incredibly boring submission sessions, and you accomplish nothing but costing the country money. Now, this is what happens when you don't have people who have a technical background in charge. So if you work for a living, folks, you know, and you kind of go to yourself, hey, look, here's a problem. A customer's come in. They've got a real difficulty. Okay, they're dying. All right. Or something that I haven't done per se, but I could fix if I wanted to, is really affecting them right now. Now, even though I haven't done anything, I got three steps that I basically follow when this happens in my life. First of all, sorry. All right, I'm sorry this has happened to you, whether or not it's my fault. If it is my fault, I'm very, very sorry. Secondly, take responsibility for the problem. Again, whether or not it's my fault, if it is my fault, I'd be very, very responsible about it. And three, solve that freaking problem. Right? Whatever it is that that person's going through, if you have the power to solve it, you kind of have an obligation to, a moral obligation, as it were. Now, what's difficult about New Zealand elections is that you don't have a whole lot of freedom to say a whole lot that you want in your advertising. And we found this out during the previous election when I was working with the Legalized Cannabis Party, is that there's so many things you're not allowed to say. You know, you've got to have all of these backup stuff and evidence and blah, 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 before you can put an advertisement on television saying something X about cannabis, right? And indeed, when you try to advertise those things on Facebook, Facebook will always come back with, no, you can't do this, you can't advertise that. We're a genuine political party that's been around for 20 years. And not allowed to advertise about maybe 90% of our videos on Facebook. And trust me, I tried. Yeah, I was just like, that one will work, that one will work. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, that one will. Yeah. Unbelievable, right? Shadow banning and things like that, these new terminologies that are coming out. You don't need to rig an election with Russians anymore, ladies and gentlemen. You can just censor the internet. And people won't know that opposition is out there. People that you'd actually want to support, actually want to listen, are actually out there. And that's the whole idea, really. Unless the government picks up the bill, it will only go before the House if it is drawn from the regular ballot for private members' bills. So basically, these guys are voting against the cannabis legislation that might get sick people cannabis now. introducing their own cannabis legislation that won't get those people their medicine now. And what they're doing with that thing is they're not actually going to start voting on it immediately and get it implemented immediately. They're going to put it into a hat, and it has to be luckily drawn at random in order for it to be voted on. And when it does get voted on, anybody could just vote against it if they want, just like a vote not too long ago concerning a conscience vote on whether or not cannabis should be legalized. I think it was a Green Party bill or something that, again, didn't go far enough. You see a pattern here, ladies and gentlemen? These people are passing the buck from buck to buck to buck to buck to buck to buck, and they're creaming off the top every single day that they manage to delay, all right? How many industries are conceivably, possibly, could be in competition with cannabis if cannabis were a viable and very, very strong and sustainable industry at this particular moment in New Zealand, considering the hemp plant itself, approximately estimates go anywhere from 25,000 to 50,000 different industrial products, ranging from soap to fireproof doors and car paneling, things of that nature. So you're talking about essentially almost every industry potentially having to now compete with an entirely new industry, with entirely new products that are virtually superior in most ways. Lighter, stronger, more better insulating for houses, etc., etc. The list goes on. So I believe that by simply keeping cannabis illegal per day, if you look at the aggregate, the various amount of corporations that do benefit from simply not having to compete, you're talking billions of dollars, you know, worldwide, billions of dollars a day from cannabis being illegal, all the way from the medicinal and industrial products and things of that nature, right? Not to mention the recreational, all the alcohol companies and baccy companies and things like that, just going, we want the recreational drug market. People can have a ciggy and a beer. That should be enough for them. We don't want them expanding their minds and what have you. It's a con job. Pretty much. And I'm tired of it. I'm so, so tired of it. And I just want people to see the truth of it. But they won't. Facts do not work. If you think that facts matter, in the broader context, they do. But it depends who you're talking to. Are you talking to a reasonable person who's logical, cares about other people, has compassion, a conscience, and integrity, intelligence? Or are you talking to a brainwashed fool who had their soul destroyed systematically by the school system to stop them thinking creatively, to stop them thinking outside the box, to stop questioning their own beliefs, and to instead repeat, repeat, repeat? If you're talking to one of those persons, pearls before swine. Do not talk to people who ain't listening. Very important lesson. The government said it will increase access now and leave it to officials to think through the controls and consequences later. That's typical of this government, but it's not acceptable, so we're putting forward a comprehensive alternative. So, so basically, hey, you just want to give sick people medicine now and then deal with consequences later of a plant that can't kill anybody. That's not responsible. We want a comprehensive... Oh, my God. National's proposed regime included medicinal cannabis products will be approved in the same way a medicine is approved by MedSafe. No loose-leaf cannabis products will be approved. Okay, now, how are products approved by MedSafe? Now, just yesterday, while trialing this this new live streaming technology, folks, we had a look at, what was it? The the testing methodologies that actually had to be applied in order to get cannabis regulated as a medicine, even one small part. Like if you, let's say, for example, there's 20 or 200 different cannabinoid arrangements. They're all different chemical compounds that are basically arrangements of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, three building blocks of life other than sunlight, right, out of the four. And what it does is it will morph into one of those different arrangements depending on the signals your cells are sending it. These are cells that you are born with. They're called cannabinoid receptors. The reason why you're born with them and the reason we know you're born with them is because cannabis molecules, those cannabinoid molecules, they're present in mother's milk. Okay. Now, if you want to say, hey, this is not a good idea, we want people to have access to something that's safe and what have you, name me something that's safer from nursing on your mother's breast. There really isn't anything more natural or more safer than that, and that's got cannabinoids in it. Okay. So if these people think that if you want to perhaps regulate a medicine by spending $200-300 million isolating a single one of those cannabinoid molecular arrangements out of the hundreds that there are potentially in order to have a single use product for only a single disorder that you give to somebody in a single way that has to be absolutely extracted and then engineered and what have you, hundreds of millions of dollars versus you freaking ingest it. You won't get high if you ingest cannabis, folks. It has to be heated first. It gets what's called decarboxylated. You can't get the THC into your system in a separate molecule that gets you high unless you heat that cannabis. That's why people who want to get high smoke it, and people who want to use it medicinally eat it. When you're eating it, on the other hand, it goes in, your cannabinoid receptors, and every single one of your cells latch onto those molecules like a little sea anemone. They send out the signals and they go, hey, I really, really need some magnesium or some zinc or something like that. What have you got, bro? And they go, oh, well, we've got a chemical arrangement that's pretty similar to that, bro. Here you go. Inserts it into the cell, injects it with the exact nutritional needs it's requiring. Why do you think cannabis seems to work for everything? It's because it's intuitive, right? There's a great belief out there that cannabis is actually part of our evolution, okay? So if you go, hey, look at the evolution of apes. Why were they much more evolved than perhaps a lot of other organisms and things like that? Why were apes able to start using tools and all of this kind of thing? Now, some people have theorized, although I'm not sure if there's enough evidence to substantiate it, could be true, that it was because they were eating cannabis and it was enabled them to see into higher consciousness. It enabled them to create things. It enabled them to evolve. It enabled cell repair. It enabled higher brain function, these kind of things. Now, I believe that the apes were able to do that because they were the first animal to have opposable thumbs for rolling joints. That was just my theory. I could be wrong on that. But anyway... Back to the article. No loose leaf cannabis products will be approved. Medical practitioners will decide who should have access to medicinal cannabis card, which will certify them to buy medicinal cannabis products. And of course, I bet you medical doctors won't be subsidized because, you know, it's about the poor people. All right. So if a law works for the poorest person, then it obviously works for everybody. All right. So if you regulate it like this, hey, everybody can grow as much as they want. If they mess up, if they hurt themselves or anything like that, it's our fault because we're supposed to educate them about how to responsibly use it, how to effectively grow it, how to make sure that you can make good stuff out of it without putting yourself in any danger. Like one guy was saying, he saw a guy in court. I think this is Shane LeBron from the Medical Cannabis Awareness New Zealand, mcans.org.nz, who I interviewed yesterday. he said when he was in court, he saw a guy who'd got scars all over his face and hands. Now, he'd been trying to purify and get the medicinal cannabis products off of the buds using butane in a closed caravan. Now, he wasn't the smartest cookie, and he blew up the caravan, and it threw him many meters away from it like a cartoon character. Okay? Being safe is absolutely important. But here's the thing. What Shane also said is that if you're going to be processing cannabis in any way, do you want to use it medicinally, etc., butter. Just simmer it in some butter. It'll soak off into that, into the fat cells of the butter, and then it'll be readily available within your system, and you can put it into cookies or brownies or put it on your toast in the morning, whatever you use a butter for. All right? It's that simple. And if butter's not your thing, you try some organic coconut oil, simmer it in that, and it'll leach out all the stuff. You know, you can get all the particulates out by straining it a few times. It's not that difficult. It's simple home baking. If you'll pardon the pun. And what would be interesting is to compare educating the population about how to prepare their own medicinal cannabis using simple things like coconut oil and butter versus saying only medical practitioners with 7 years practice minimum can prescribe a card only if they choose to people only they deem worthy. Don't you think it would actually work out a little bit better for everybody if my idea was the case instead of these people's need to control everything? I don't know about you folks, but I hate people trying to control me. It's like Mark Passio said, there are two types of people in this world. Those who want to be left alone, and those who won't leave them alone. All right. And I think that it'd be good to have government that literally just our motto is we want to just leave you alone, bro. like we want to tell you a whole bunch of things and give you information and things of that nature. But then our job is done. You're good. You know, you can take care of yourself. There's resources available on the internet, Citizens Advice Bureau, that kind of thing. Bro, go for your life. Be happy. Enjoy your life. Your private life is your private life. We won't fucking surveil you with our drafts of draconian legislation just so that we can control you. You know, I don't like that. Don't like it. Medicinal cannabis products will be pharmacist-only medicine. Pharmacist-only medicine. Oh, my God. Dude, see, it doesn't matter what you're talking about when it comes to cannabis or anything. If you treat it as though it's as dangerous as lettuce, that is the appropriate level of caution. All right, maybe you should treat cannabis a bit less cautiously than lettuce, because lettuce has actually killed people. It's horrible. They choke on whole leaves and things like that. We need substantial amounts of legislation to regulate how thick you can cut lettuce leaves and stuff like that. You see how petty that kind of argument is? Like, this is the argument that they're using. This can't kill you, but, we need to make sure that it's absolutely safe, this thing that can't. I'm freaking believe. Cultivators and manufacturers must be licensed for commercial production. License holders and staff will be vetted to ensure they are fit and proper persons, meaning that if you've got criminal convictions, like a conviction current, like it goes in one direction, then it comes back like an infinity loop of criminality, kind of like the revolving doors of government and the former board of directors of Monsanto Corporation. Because the problem is here, when they talk about cultivators and that kind of thing, a lot of the best growers in New Zealand have cannabis convictions. a lot of the most knowledgeable cannabis experts in this country have cannabis convictions. Now, this isn't to say that if you don't have any convictions and stuff like that, you don't have any credibility. That is the case, but I'm not saying that. Now, next point on here, a licensing regime that will create a safe market for medicinal cannabis products. Now, this is the thing. They're only going for the medicinal here, whereas if you talk about the concept of recreational cannabis, it's like, okay, when was the last time you saw somebody stoned in the street yelling out and singing all angrily and stumbling about and assaulting people, groping women and getting into trouble and stuff like that? You ever seen a stoner do that? No, because that's what drunk people do. That's what drunk people do, not stoners. All right? Somebody was asked once, somebody of the legalized cannabis party was asked, what makes you stoners think you can run the country? And he quickly replied, well, you alcoholics don't seem to be doing a very fucking good job. You know? Think about it. How many times have you, I don't know, felt unsafe? This is how cannabis actually got legalized in Colorado, now that I remember it. It wasn't the facts. It wasn't the evidence. It wasn't the 10,000-year history. It wasn't any of that. You know what it was? It was a single advertisement of a girl doing a fucking J and saying she would prefer to do this because when she goes out on the town, she doesn't feel safe because there's too many drunk guys about that grope her and don't make her feel safe, like people who she's smoking cannabis around make her feel safe. All right, that's what tipped the public consciousness over on the order. This is how you convince people of the arguments that you want to portray. You don't argue with somebody on the point that you already know that they disagree with. They think cannabis is dangerous and stuff like that. Change the argument. All right. And you say, well, think about how dangerous alcohol is, and maybe people should deserve an alternative that isn't quite as dangerous. You know, it's about thinking differently about things and being polite in the discourse, because often, especially along the cannabis issue, because people are suffering and dying as we speak, because the law is the way it is. All right, that's not something you can argue your way out of. That is the way it is. People suffering, people dying, while we continue to talk about the niceties of it. And no amount of mental gymnastics changes that. Now, here we go. A licensing regime that will create a safe market for medicinal cannabis products. Cultivators and manufacturers will not be able to be located within 5 kilometres of residential land or 1 kilometre of sensitive sites such as schools and Waihitapu. No advertising of medicinal cannabis products to the public will be permitted. The New Zealand Ministry of Health will review the legislation in 5 years. Now, you're allowed to advertise paracetamol, you know, seems like a very benign drug. Kills 10,000 people a year in the United States, paracetamol does, I think, according to the Emperor Wears No Clothes, the old hemp Bible. National is determined to be a constructive opposition working on new ideas and new policies, Bridges said. Yeah, because these people have a really great track record of new ideas. Hey, we'll sell state assets. Hey, we'll increase surveillance. Hey, we'll deflower everybody's rights and stuff like that. Radical new thinking. Oh my God, these guys are so fresh. I can't get over the amount of freshness I feel. And oh my God, I'm just over the moon with this freshness, bro. I just can't get over how fresh it is. National's bill was the result of significant work in recent months, including study by MPs overseas, and reflects a blend of international best practice tailored to New Zealand. I encourage the government to pick up the enormous amount of work done by National and Opposition and implement our comprehensive reforms to ensure New Zealanders in need can access high-quality medicinal cannabis products to ease their suffering. Only after they go to a doctor, only after the doctor approves it, and only after we get the legislation passed, and that's only after it gets drawn out of the hat, and that's only after the corporations get set up in order to manufacture the cannabis, and that's only after they've done the testing to make sure that they're safe, and that's only after they've ensured the quality of supply, and then the doctors who don't want to prescribe cannabis will be allowed to prescribe cannabis, which they won't prescribe to the people who need it. Thank you!
Out, thank you! The fresh, out, the fresh maker!
For goodness sake, oh my god, I hate knowing things sometimes. Do you ever get that, folks, when you go like, oh, I know too much? I see through too much BS. It's not soft and comfortable anymore. Oh, the misfortune. Good. Now, beer is good and healthy. Some alcohol is good and healthy. Drunkenness is not so good. I don't disagree in particular. I mean, and then actually brings me on to another interesting point. Addiction. I've got addiction problems. My mate Jono's got addiction problems. I think a lot of people do. You know, I've got coffee and that kind of stuff, and I just need stuff to do my work. That's what my brain tells me. You need it. You need that coffee. And it turns out that a lot of people who have addictive personalities, like mine, are badly traumatized and not raised well by a mum and a dad. All right, like me, like my mate Jono, like any number of us, right, essentially. And a YouTube channel called Black Pilled, remarkable video just the other day, saying that it was Hollywood, and he showed these graphs of divorce rates in the US and divorce rates from all sorts of countries around the world, that had this huge bump right after a certain point, all of them simultaneously, worldwide pretty much, in every way, major Western nation. And he goes back, what was the genesis of this? How did that happen? And he goes to these films that were released like kind of like in the year before that huge uptick in divorce rates and single parent families and things like that started happening. And in those years, a number of films, and he said allegedly hundreds of films, were being made by Hollywood that glorified divorce, cheating, and that kind of thing, that had kids saying, oh, no, everybody comes from broken homes. It's fine. It's just another day, and that kind of thing. And then you see the divorce rate up, 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 up. And this was the scary part. You have a look and you compare that divorce rate that goes da 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 da, and then you have a look at all the other demographic statistics. Depression rates, da 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 da, suicide rates, da 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 da. You know, just a generalized unhappiness. All right. Now, those of you who have been in a long-term relationship, who love your partner, and you pretty much do everything for each other, you know, you'll understand what I mean when I say that having somebody there for you when you walk through the door, who's not going to betray you, who helps you through with your daily life and helps you get stuff done, helps you run the house and helps you essentially run your life, is intensely satisfying and comforting. It's very rewarding. And I have a joke, you know, I was like saying this to my wife the other day. Why is a wife so expensive? Because they're worth it, right? Now, you have a look at those statistics, as I mentioned before, the suicide, the depression, and that kind of thing, the broken homes and kids not growing up. So what we've got now is we've got a broken home society syndrome, all right? We've got a whole generation, maybe two entire generations, the baby boomers plus us, that have been affected by this. And by us, I mean the Generation X's, the 1984 to 2000s, and not to mention the millennials on from that. So maybe two, three generations of brainwashing and indoctrination into destroying the family. Now, Tennell here raises absolute, hit the nail on the head, cultural Marxism. This is social engineering, right? They're trying to destroy society. The easiest way to destroy society is to destroy the family unit, because society is nothing but a sequence of family units linked together with border family units and regions and cities and so on and so forth, the smallest one being the individual, the second smallest being the family. If you destroy the family, you cut the individual off from their greater place and placement in the wider society. It's the family that helps you teach where you fit in the world. Okay? And if you destroy that, then wider society teaches you where you fit in the world. You have to do this, you have to do that, and blah, blah, blah. Now, this kicks in your survival mechanism. All right, so you go, all right, I need to survive, and my survival is absolutely dependent on the group. So what likelihood is there that I will express my individuality and my displeasure with the entire group's way of doing things if by doing so my survival itself could be threatened? Okay? They want to create a society where it's impossible to resist, simply irresistible, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I believe, personally, that's not the best idea. You know, and history proves this as well. There hasn't been a single society that's developed to really any kind of authoritarian dictatorship that didn't result in destruction, starvation, war, infighting, and tribalism. Maybe let's not do that. Let's think about this. Extremism. Extremists, to every side of the spectrum, people think are a big danger. And it's not necessarily true. It depends on what their belief is. So, for example, if somebody's an extreme cannabis believer, and what the worst thing that they're going to do, that if you become a cannabis extremist, is they'll wear raggedy clothes, they may not cut their hair, they may smoke joints that are far too large and do so far too regularly. And that's about as dangerous as they're going to get. Oh, it's a guy with long hair and an enormous joint who appears not terribly unhappy. I feel relatively frightened, I guess. It's not really that. There's a cult of believers that have a non-violent veganism extremist. All right, a non-violent vegan extremist. You go more extreme, and then you get to the point where you go that the more extreme these non-violent extremists are, the more extremely non-violent they become. The less threatening they become, the more extreme they become. You see how that works? Now, how they're trying to create extremism in society of a different nature is they're trying to control the mob's thinking. So you go, okay, have a look at how people are thinking. They don't like us. They really hate us. Oh my God, they want to kill us. How do we stop that from happening? Well, we could change what we do and stop lying to them and stop killing them, stop surveilling them and stop selling them out. No, we don't want to do that. We'll lose all our money and power. Yeah, but you've got heaps of money and power already. Yeah, but I need more. I can't need more. All right, so their dilemma is, they want more money and power, but they know that people don't want to give it to them. So they've got to manipulate you into fighting with each other so that you'll take power off each other and give it to them. The way that you do this is you create little echo chambers. Your voice is a powerful thing. Silence it. All right? Right there, ladies and gentlemen. You can silence people's dissent by making them think that there is no dissent, right? Or at least no reasonable dissent. You've got to have emotion. I think that Bill Hicks was right when he said that mainstream media is essentially trying to stop you from experiencing real emotion. they're trying to stop you from having your own voice of reason reflected back to you. Because on an instinctual level, when these people talk, there's a little part of you that says, that's bullshit. That's bullshit. But you don't know exactly why it's bullshit. You don't know the exact facts that contradict it, because that's why liars are almost always at an advantage when you first start off. Because to get to the truth takes a lot of digging. To come up with another lie is instant. You can come up with 1,000 lies in the time it'll take somebody to discover that your first lie that you told wasn't true, unless they already know. So where this comes into cannabis legislation and where this comes into society is that people who draft legislation need to come from a background that actually facilitates that skill set. How can you make things simple? How can you make things work? How can you get things done? These are not three things that you associate with the daily operations of government, is it? This is something that you would associate with an entrepreneur who's starting a business, or with a scientist that has a particularly important project in the works. These are professional people who actually want to achieve things, not necessarily just for themselves, but for everybody. Now, I want to get out there the message, ladies and gentlemen. Please, if you are watching this on the live stream right now, we will be going for one more hour. This is a two-hour live cast. I'll be jetting off for my break in just a minute. Now, I want to encourage people to support American Freedom Radio. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com. There are donate buttons there. And also the links in the description of this video. There are links to my Patreon. I believe there's also my KiwiBank bank account number. And it is absolutely imperative, ladies and gentlemen, that you support alternative media that give you the truth, that give you the reality, because ultimately there is infinite funding for those who want to give you BS, who want to make you depressed, and we just want to give you the truth and make you feel happy, essentially. So please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com or patreon.com/VinnyEastwood, and make sure to like and subscribe to the channel. And there's a little bell there next to the subscribe button. If you tick that, it'll actually give you notifications when these video casts go live. And of course, we'll be taking about a 5-minute break fairly shortly, and we will see you after that for the next hour, ladies and gentlemen. AFR, have you got the feed there going in the background, or it might not just be going?
Yes,
yet.
It'll be coming up in a second.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for watching this first hour. I only managed to get through one article, of course, but I think it went well, you know, just for a first little live stream for the hour. Now, in the background behind me, you'll see these nice green screen plates that my friend Mikhail Pierce did, and we'll have the American Freedom Radio audio and that green screen background to watch while I'm on break. So, Danny, if you just keep the feed up, and I'll go on break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, and our very first ever live stream simulcast with American Freedom Radio and the Vinnie Eastwood YouTube channel. Oh, baby, it feels good to have made some progress. Oh, yeah, I did quite a bit of work. Yeah, Danny, it took us so much work, bro. It was, I just want to check something for the listening audience. I got to show you this because it's just crazy the amount of tests we did to do those recordings. So what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. We did like 17 different audio tests, changing one setting, changing another setting, experimenting with this, that, and the other, and so, something like that, in order to get the live streaming technology right. So yeah, it was a big job. Oh baby. And so glad to have it working. So please sing out in the chat room if you know, the American Freedom Radio audio over the break was good, and if my audio is good now, and that kind of thing. Please let us know if there are any problems and that kind of thing, because we here at American Freedom Radio, we're audiophiles. We love audio, and if it ain't good enough, it groans on us somewhat massively. And often we don't know if it's happening unless somebody tells us. So, yes, if it is, please let us know. Ah, so, here we go. On to the next article here. Giles Newton Howes, is medical cannabis a wolf in sheep's clothing? Now, there's a video here that obviously we're not going to watch anymore because it was Simon Bridges' exact thing that he said during the first hour there, so it's not worth revisiting. However, based upon that announcement, there was a whole raft of articles that came off, really kind of cruxing into this issue, right? Now, as the debate over legalizing medical cannabis burns on, the arguments for potential benefits need to be weighed against the arguments for potential risks. Okay. Here's how you weigh them against. There's bugger all risks and a shockingly large amounts of benefits. Argument over. Particularly to mental health and society's view of the drug generally. Okay, society's view of the drug generally is based on lies that were propagated and propagandized for frickin' nearly a century. 90 years it's been illegal in New Zealand.
90 years! Oh my God!
And bro, mental health from cannabis? Get really, really high, as high as you can. I'm not saying try this at home. It's just an example, ladies and gentlemen. Don't take me literally, unless you have enough weed. But you see, no matter how high you get, you might flip out a little bit. You might freak out and go, oh, my God, it's so weird. Sit down in a chair. Eat something. Have some water. Rest for an hour, and the mental illness goes away. It's called short-term psychosis, folks. Doesn't do any permanent damage. Everything that you do in life has a, you know, maybe that's a bit too much kind of point. At least this bit too much kind of point, A, won't cause permanent damage, and B, can't kill you. All right, which again is permanent damage in it. Because death's pretty permanent at this point, isn't it? It's debatable to a large degree. I don't know, we'll do that on another show. Now, he smoked heaps of fish. The use of cannabis as a medicine has a long tradition with a wide variety of ailments identified as potentially being ameliorated by. There is also growing interest in its use largely for neuropsychiatric conditions such as spasticity and seizures. Although there may be benefits in the use of cannabis and cannabis-based products, there is also a potential negative impact on mental health. A potential impact, not an actual impact. You see the wording? Both in terms of individual use and how society sees cannabis more generally. Now, if you hadn't lied to society about cannabis and its alleged potential negative impacts, then maybe the society would view cannabis
a little differently.
This is important as cannabis is widely used in New Zealand, despite our current prohibitionist stance. In fact, we have the second highest usage per capita in the world, number one being Jamaica. Coincidentally, we have the second highest reggae music appreciation in the world, second only again to Jamaica. There is a connection, baby. I'm pretty. I don't know what it is. Weed, good music. I don't know. Somebody else do the math on that one. Catherine O'Connell, nice to see you too. Use in New Zealand is high by international standards, and it is interesting to see that in the United States, where legalization on legal use of cannabis varies by state, there appears to be increasing rates of addiction problems where cannabis is legally allowed as medicine. You mean, oh, is there? Is there now, buddy? Let's just check that puppy here. Let's go to the Aotearoa Legalized Cannabis Party page and show the post that the president put up just a while ago that actually listed some of the things that happened as a direct result. See, again, this is what I told you earlier about, folks, about how when somebody's lying, they're in the advantaged position, because it's going to take you a little while to get any of the facts that contradict their BS up on the screen, kind of thing. So here we are, finally found it. Marijuana in Colorado results after the first 6 months of legalization. 10% less poverty and crime in Denver. 60% fewer homicides in Denver. 5.6 less violent crime in Denver. 12 to 40 million saved each year in enforcement costs. 10,000 jobs created in the marijuana industry. That's after 6 months. This person, there appears to be increasing rate of addiction problems where it's legally allowed as a medicine. Oh, yeah, because that's obviously the cause of the addiction, and it wouldn't be the overall, defathering and destroying of the family unit and so on and so forth, and about 20 other different informational factors that tie into something. Okay, you can't just say somebody's smoking cannabis and they happen to be a criminal, therefore the cannabis caused them to be a criminal. That is called being fucking retarded. Okay, like, bro, just this. How can I explain this in the way that somebody who, I can't explain it to somebody like that. I really can't. If you're lying in the media, and make no mistake, this person's deliberately lying here. They're trying to poison the freaking well, bro. The link between legalization of cannabis for medical use and growth in a drug use disorder is great. Legalization of cannabis. Where does this person come up with this data? All right. See, here's the thing. When somebody is not bullshitting you, they are often very, very suspicious of themselves, and they go, "Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know how to exactly sort this one out, and such and such, and blah blah blah." But when somebody is not filling you full of BS, then in actual fact, they won't back up what they're saying with facts. They won't be trepidatious about the things they say, like somebody who is telling the truth. With increasing the use of cannabis in the community, the mental health problems directly related to use are likely to increase. And again, what evidence is it showing? None? Oh, okay. It's a lie. These are well documented. That's a lie. And include psychosis, anxiety disorders, cognitive problems, and as mentioned above, addiction. And again, a lie. Not caused by the cannabis. These are societal issues that are caused by a range of factors. Like, let's say if you did a meta-analysis about why all of this stuff is happening, you'll find that cannabis relieves psychosis, reduces anxiety, increases cognitive function, and indeed is not an addictive substance in a physical manner. The body doesn't crave it. The body needs it. There's a difference. If you become cannabinoid deficient, and this is a new disorder for those people who don't want to legalize cannabis, a diagnosed cannabinoid deficiency can manifest as being very closed-minded. Sound like every prohibitionist you ever heard of? They're deficient. They're sick. Don't listen to sick people. They're crazy. They can't see things. All right. It's like somebody who drives without looking out the windshield and only looks at the rearview mirror to see where they've been, not where they're going. Psychotic mental disorder, like schizophrenia, is a significant mental health and public health concern. And again, not caused by the cannabis. And when you do have a mental problem because of the cannabis, it goes away after a couple hours. And that's assuming you do have that problem. And in which case, stop smoking so frickin' much of it and tone it down and don't be an idiot. Be responsible. I mean, Is this a radical regulation for the public? Be responsible. Don't be an idiot. Okay? Is it clear enough? And because, interestingly enough, when you be responsible and don't be an idiot, a lot of concerns that the public have about health, etc., don't freaking happen anymore. You know, surprisingly, nobody saw that go. And the links with cannabis and psychosis are clearest for use in youth. And again, no freaking study to prove it. All right. Any potential for the use of cannabis as a medicine in youth and early adulthood is therefore risky. So you make an assumption, provide no evidence, and then based on that assumption that has no evidence, you make another assumption based upon that assumption that has no evidence. Okay. You see?
The brain. Oh, my God.
When you think, all right, it might be difficult for some people, but and for me, thinking is difficult because there's a myriad of distractions and my brain's kind of fractured all over the place and that kind of thing. So essentially, when you think, you also have to listen, usually to yourself. And you listen to yourself and you go, am I being a ignorant dickweed who's just not listening to people and being a lying lapdog of a ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery? Is this me? Like, imagine if the author of this article asked themselves that question. Imagine what kind of answer his consciousness would give him. Bearing in mind the considerable pressure for the use of cannabis as an analgesic, this poses a major challenge. I don't know what analgesic means. I don't think it's sexual, but we're going to go find out in a little Google searchy here. Oh, yeah, that's right. There's a problem with this puppy here is that I've got two keyboards in front of me because the other computer just to the left of me has the Skype running. It's on this call too, and it's recording the Skype call of a drug acting to relieve pains. Like like anesthetic. Analgesic. All right. Cool. Got it. This poses a major challenge. Don't you love learning new words, ladies and gentlemen? I love learning new words. I know tens of thousands of words of the English language. I consider the English language my biatch. But when the time comes to learn a new word, it's usually Latin, not English. It would be difficult to see clinical scenarios where young patients with pain disorders insist on a trial of cannabis irrespective of the risk. And yeah, of course, because you can't die from it, and any of the problems you have aren't freaking permanent.
That's why you would smoke weed irrespective of the risk, because it's not that there's no risk. There's virtually no risk.
I mean, please, ladies and gentlemen, just give me the strength. Whatever higher consciousness form that I'm part of a fractal universal hologram is a part of, just channel the strength to my individual cell membranes just to deal with it. Oh, God. The link between cannabis and anxiety disorders is also most pronounced in teenagers. There's a link, but it's not causal. Do you know what causal means? If I shag a chick and she has a baby, it's a causal link. me being with that chick might link to children and reproduction and raising of the child, but it might not be causal unless I'm shagging her. You see? All right? Causal, assumptive, BS, propaganda. I mean, is it? Sorry, guys. A little bit of a rant. I need more coffee. That's the stuff. The difficulty with cognitive problems are more complex to disentangle. I bet this guy really, really finds it very complex. If you've got two enormously thick posts of wood, and you had to get them to think cognitively, and you just be like, you sit them down in a chair in a classroom, all right, you two, I want you to spell out your name. No, that's not how you hold a pencil. You got to be able to pick it up. I know you don't have opposable thumbs, but just pick it up. See, this is the challenge in getting people who can't think to be able to think. You know, like it's kind of a lost cause. So, you know, that pearls before swine wisdom. Again, don't talk to people who ain't listening to you. Don't share your ideas with people who are too dumb to understand them. Immediately stop talking to them and walk away. You will save yourself so much time and effort, ladies and gentlemen. Took me 2 years of activism on the streets, yelling at people through a megaphone, thinking I was New Zealand's Alex Jones before I realized that. The only thing that you actually got to do when it comes to activism is help other activists be heard. Because if you do a good activism act of some description and nobody hears about it, in the age of the internet, it freaking didn't happen. There's no record of it. All right? It's like that old saying, if a tree falls in a forest and nobody is around to hear it, does it make a sound? If an activist goes out and exposes scumbaggery, but nobody watches the video of it, or there is no video of it, did you really expose them? The answer is, unfortunately, as much as I would like the answer to be different, the answer is no. The answer is no. But may relate to a lower life satisfaction that is found with chronic cannabis use. You know why people chronically use cannabis? Because of their low life satisfaction. Because society is not run in a way that allows free-thinking people to live easily. All right? And in fact, they have to find entire new methods of survival outside of the group's support. A further social challenge associated with cannabis as a medicine is the potential change in acceptability for use and how this may impact on mental health issues. Increasing cannabis use has been considered likely to be associated with increasingly liberal policy. As cannabis dons the jacket of medical acceptability, even if it is licensed only for use in specific conditions and only in later adulthood, this is likely to increase use and reduce the perceived risks in all age groups. So, I don't understand what this guy's on about. It's just straight up. Muddy the water, tell some outrageous lies. I mean, seriously, this guy's holding back the collective consciousness of the country. It's extraordinarily frustrating to see. And I haven't really gotten to grips. Still, even after all these years, you can't stop having an emotional response to these people, you know, instantly, regardless of how you want to act, how you want to feel, because you're so traumatized by the things that you know. And let's make no bones about it. Listen to this show and shows that espouse different and similar kinds of information will have a possibility of traumatizing you. And because of that trauma, it makes it very difficult to control your emotional responses when it comes to seeing the things that caused your trauma. lies, propaganda, scumbaggery, false flags, things like that. You have an emotional response. Ah, you know, you feel it. You can't suppress it because it, regardless, it's there. And we want a, I want a society where I don't get triggered like that all the time. And the only way that's going to happen is if I expose myself on a daily basis to all of these remarkably frustrating triggers, just so that I can get used to them, build up a tolerance to them, and eventually help to change one small part of society so that it is better for people like me and people like you, lovely people in the audience here. And thank you very much for joining. Oh, Jeremy, you're late. That's all right, bro. It's all right. You weren't sent an invite, and it was only up online like about 30 minutes beforehand. Because I'm sorry, guys, I was gonna organize it, but I was waiting for it until very much later this morning because my guest Chris Leach from the New Zealand Democrats for Social Credit Party was supposed to be here. But I called his cell phone twice. I emailed him 2 days ago and sent Facebook messages, and nothing. Nothing. Leader of a political party, and you can't even contact him, no matter, even if you've got 48 hours for a show that's organized well over a month ago. It's very disappointing. So we're going through cannabis stuff today, as well as touching on a number of other topics as we get through this. Now, the problem is compounded in those with severe mental illness from whom cannabis significantly worsens an outcome. And again, no evidence. Despite these documented poor outcomes, again, no evidence. No documents. When you say documented,
and you don't produce a document.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, the word doesn't mean what you think it means. Despite these documented poor outcomes, cannabis use in this group is prevalent, and identifying cannabis as a medicine opens the door to this group arguing cannabis is, quote, my medicine. Oh, you mean like people would be able to choose what they put in their own bodies? Really? Oh my God, that just sounds terrible. What a bad idea. Medicine that works, that people prefer over other medicines? Man. What kind of dangerous side effects does this cannabis have? Well, you become happy, then you get hungry, and then you get thirsty, and then you get sleepy. Oh yeah, is that about it? Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Well, man, we really need to regulate this and warn the public and tell a whole bunch of lies in the mainstream media that are just going to post them without any
evidence to substantiate. Oh, it makes me mad. Oh, it does. It really, really does.
Particularly in conditions like schizophrenia, where correlations between cannabis,
again, correlation is not causality,
onset and functional impairment are clear.
And provide no evidence.
Patients may prefer the short-term benefits of a high, despite the long-term difficulties.
Which he doesn't illustrate.
It's just unbelievable. And these are the kind of things that you don't have comment sections for, ladies and gentlemen, every time. Every time we try to give people crap about cannabis in the mainstream media, the comment sections are just loaded with people doing to them the exact same thing I'm doing to these bastards now. This raises the potential for psychiatrists and other physicians to become gatekeepers for cannabis use, trying to weigh the harm minimization of prescribing cannabis to mental health patients to ensure a safe and known product, as opposed to their patients sourcing illicit cannabis or growing it themselves without the need for organized crime or any other crap. Hmm? Oh, guys, by the way, this thing has like some sort of, you know, the YouTube algorithms, and they say, oh, there's certain types of comments that aren't allowed here, you know? And I was just wondering, it'd be interesting what they're gonna say, because I see some of it automatically disabling people's comments and stuff here. But here we go. I've just approved them now, so they've been added. There you go, guys. All right, on with the article. This appears similar to the use of methadone for opioid dependence, but no clear policy has been considered around this, except 20 years ago when the Aotearoa Legalized Cannabis Party got spat into existence through the blood, sweat and tears and raided homes of the activists that actually began the party and came up with a broad brush political solution for the whole nine yards of cannabis, the medicinal, the recreational, the industrial, with clear outlines to prevent harm and to have a safe, regulated network where people could grow their own, have social dealing. All of the benefits, none of the drawbacks. Simple. But of course, you have to research into things. All right. And actually, what's the term?
Give a flying fuck
about facts and things of that nature, you know, which clearly the author of this article doesn't. This appears similar to the use of methadone for opioid dependence, but no clear policy has been considered around this. Maybe methadone is not the best example to lump in there with cannabis, considering one of my mates, he was on methadone for years and years and years and years. He was determined to get off it, but he knew, and everybody knows once they're on it, that you can't get off it. He was reducing his intake by like 1 gram a month, or it was 1 gram a week or something like that. He was on 100 grams a day of that stuff being prescribed to him and stuff like that for his previous addiction problems. He only just got rid of it after like 10 years, all right, like a couple of months ago or something like that, and his body's still going to take another couple of years, like his organs and things like that. He's doing a lot of good stuff for his health now in order to get himself right back. He's losing a bit of weight and that kind of thing. I'm intensely proud of him. And that kind of thing. Nothing like that with cannabis. You could stop smoking weed if you're smoking all day, every day. You could stop smoking weed tomorrow. You wouldn't have a nice day. Let's not make any bones about it. But you wouldn't die. You wouldn't have such bad reactions and things like that. Basically, if you sit down and play a video game for like, I don't know, 2 days in a row, more or less, by the time you've done that, you'll have been so distracted by that video game for that period of time that you'll be kind of over your dependency of it. And you'll just be like, whoa, everything's a lot brighter in color, and I can hear sounds more clearly, and I can smell things, I can taste things a lot better and stuff like that. All your senses become a lot sharpened when the weed comes out of your daily usage. However, a whole bunch of other things come up that are not so great. You know, your aggression levels come up, your willingness to sit down and listen to people goes down, your ability to have fun, make jokes, come up with a lot of creative things gets reduced. And it depends, you know, what works for you. Do you function high, or do you function sober and prefer to get high on the weekends? You know, I'm one, my wife is the other. And that's the thing. We each use what works for us and what we can function with. Medical practitioners are likely to be those who are left facing these dilemmas as Parliament marches towards opening the door to medical cannabis. Associate Professor Giles Newton-House is in the University of Otago's Wellington Department of Psychological Medicine. Psychological medicine. No qualifications in actual medicine. Okay. No clinical psychology. Okay. No meta-analysis. No evidence. No documentation. Where does the money for psychological medicine come from? The pharmaceutical industry And what do they sell you? Psychotropic drugs. What do people who start taking cannabis wind up stop taking almost immediately afterwards because they find they don't need them anymore? Pharmaceutical drugs. I wonder if there's a connection between the financing of people who teach one pill for every ill and the universities getting donations and whole blocks of science labs donated by major pharmaceutical companies. I wonder if there's a connection between that monetary input and the media output of those associate professors, right? Just a little bit of suspicion, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, there are links in the description, and I would love it if you would subscribe to the channel, click that little notification bell, and also start up a $1 a month donation through the Patreon or through the Kiwi Bank. And I believe those things are linked, and the numbers are there in the description. Continuing on, Chloe Swarbrook, evidence should end the war on drugs. Now, this goes back to a point I was making before, that evidence is simply not enough. Evidence won't convince people who won't listen. Evidence won't change the mind of people who can't be convinced by evidence. Right? Very, very simple. So, earlier this week, the New Zealand Drug Foundation released their annual survey on Kiwi attitudes towards cannabis. Across the board, among voters of all stripes, support for cannabis law reform is increasing. Now, it's gained a massive traction in New Zealand recently. Like, it was one of the top issues in the last election, and it's essentially one of the only issues that survived the election, because it's the only one nobody's doing anything about. Nothing but talking, nothing but introducing legislation that doesn't do anything, or delaying that legislation that doesn't do anything and trying to replace it with other stuff that'll do even less. Am I being too cynical? I think I'm actually displaying the appropriate amount of cynicism. And I saw the results of that Drug Foundation study as well. In fact, conceivably may have put them on the cannabis party thingies. Did I put them up there? I don't think I did. Swangler. That's very unfortunate. That's extraordinarily unfortunate, in fact. Bugger. Oh, well. Okie dokie. What have we got here? We've got about 25 minutes to crack through on the show there. And I apologize, folks, if I haven't been reading your comments, but that's part of the gig. On occasion, the survey found that 87% of New Zealanders support growing and or using cannabis for any medical reasons, such as to alleviate pain, a jump of almost 10 percentage points over the last 12 months. Okay, as the public consciousness increases, it'll get to an exponential flow rate. So you'll go, people will wake up one at a time, then two at a time, then three at a time, then four, you know, and that exponential growth rate pattern. So the longer this debate continues, the more untenable the debate will be for the antis, the delayers, and varying other forms of scumbaggery that we have to attend with around the world. And of course, you know, New Zealand's not the only country that's struggling with cannabis law reform. Despite many positive developments in the United States, there's still an enormous drug war going over there. There's still a whole bunch of non-violent drug offenders in those private prisons earning profits for those shareholders at the cost of human life and productivity. It's not on, bro, and it needs to end immediately, like, as in, stop it just now. I mean, this moratorium on all cannabis arrests immediately, release all the criminals that only have non-violent cannabis convictions. You start there, and then you start working out the framework, if you even freaking really need one. An anarcho-syndicalist framework might work conceivably with a plant that can't kill anybody, possibly. I don't know. I came up with some frameworks for this, but unfortunately, no, it's not going to be. It's not going to be the thing we want, or at least these major political parties and mainstream media are not going to push the agenda that people want and need. Essentially, they're going to, as I said before, conflate cannabis with different potential risks and things of that nature and simply ignore evidence. So this article here from Chloe Swarbrick, Green MP. Now, what was interesting is that Julianne Genta was the head of the, you know, Green Party's cannabis, you know, agenda kind of thing. And then directly after the election, when they got made coalition partners with the government, they handed it down to basically one of the newest MPs and least well-known, Chloe Swarbrick, right? And then the vote for that bill capsizes, like Waka Tipu, and just goes into nothing. And now we're stuck with debate for another couple of years until the referendum in 2019. And, of course, the next election in 2020. So it's not going to work very well for those people who are going to die in the next 2 years-ish. Because they don't have their medicine, because they can't grow their medicine, because they're afraid of getting busted, because the government won't get off its ass and do what is necessary. Legalized Cannabis Party is prepared to do what's necessary, but we're trying to grow the support base for that. Meanwhile, as regards recreational use, 67% of New Zealanders support reform for personal possession and use, and 61% support reform for personal growing. See, right there, the minority is in control of this country. It'd be interesting if it was like, you know, 67% reform for personal use, and it would be funny if there was like 23% of the country are like classified as completely alcoholics and or retarded, you know. You know, statistical anomalies are real funny like that sometimes. You just see something and you're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. All of this is important because it demonstrates that our cannabis laws are wildly out of step with the opinion of everyday Kiwis. But perhaps, I would say knowledge of everyday Kiwis. Kiwis smoke weed every day and they know that it don't cause harm. They know that if it legalized, it wouldn't go out of control. They know. But perhaps even worse than that, we know for a fact that our cannabis laws are wildly out of step with everyday practice. Yep. The most recent Ministry of Health study we have on drug consumption in New Zealand is unfortunately from 2013, 5 years ago. Like, that's how important studying the drug usage of New Zealanders is to its government, who wants to protect them so much from drugs that it delays them being legalized for 90 years. 5 years every now and again, we might do a test. What could possibly happen inside of 5 years? A meth epidemic? Yeah, nobody would see that one. Which at the time found that more than 400,000 Kiwis had used cannabis in the last 12 months. That's 10%. And that's assuming those are the ones that just told you that, yes, if you're replying to a study, yeah, I did, as opposed to the incredibly professional people and what have you that use it all the time and just say, no, I don't use it at all. They lie. They lie because, not because they're dishonest, but because they're not stupid. Ignorant and stupid people are to be rightly feared. You're surrounded by idiots. And idiots are dangerous. Idiots won't think something through before they throw a bottle at you. Idiots won't consider the consequences to your life of firing you because they don't like your cannabis use or your opinions about it. Idiots are dangerous people. And statistically speaking, half of people are below average intelligence. That is a very, very scary thing. You are surrounded by these people. They control society, and they will destroy and hurt and lock up the people who aren't dumb like them, who aren't ignorant, who aren't discompassionate. You know? And that's the thing. I sympathize with a lot of people who still have to go to an everyday job and haven't taken the leap like myself and a number of other activists have to, you know, go full-time into activism. I get you. I completely understand. This isn't something I made because I wanted to. I don't want to be here, folks. I don't want to be the man to tell children that there's no Christmas. I just want a home and family in peace, you know, like William Wallace. That'd be great, wouldn't it? But unfortunately, I can't have any of those things. Not while society is the way it is. Not while it's heading the way it's heading. And I've had to sacrifice what it is that I desire, what it is that I want to do, because I've determined that doing the right thing is more important than doing what's right for me in a lot of ways. Don't get me wrong, though. I still take care of myself and make sure that I have time off to recover, because when you deal with complex emotion, especially if you listen to the shows we did last month or the month before, sorry, with one of the survivors from the USS Liberty, this is, you know, this is an emotional job. It's a tough gig, and no person, unless they're a psychopath, can listen to people's pain, frustration, and terrible stories and horrible truths about the world without some darkness becoming attached to them. Now, I notice that when I'm built up with that darkness, I get mean, I get malevolent, I say mean and hurtful things. I mistreat my listeners. I get on really angry, unfunny rants, that kind of thing, because it's just dealing with too much darkness. Need to let it out. And it seems that everybody has that kind of darkness that we wrestle with, and you got to kind of restrain it to a large degree, particularly if you've got a lot of it. And I do have a lot of it. That's why I spend a lot of my time fighting, more or less, because I'm still a child. You know, I never really grew up. I'm just a boy who wants to be a man. And I believe that the good things I do and the good man I am will eventually become the same thing. That's the hope anyway. And I'll continue doing what I believe to be right until such time as somebody better can replace me, more or less. In that study, 42% of people reported they used it to alleviate pain. The cat is well and truly out of the bag. Prohibition is not working. On top of that, there are a number of New Zealand police officers who have openly admitted to the fact that cannabis is being decriminalised on the front line. But what does all of that mean? The most important starting point is to make it clear that the issues of medicinal and recreational cannabis are two separate issues. Now, that's a little bit disingenuous in my opinion, because they're not actually separate issues if they're the same friggin' plant. All right, so these are two different uses, I understand. But they're not really two issues. It really is one issue, and those are just two aspects of the one issue, which has way more than just two aspects. There will be a referendum on adult recreational use of cannabis on or by 2020 per the Green Labour Confidence and Supply Agreement. Now, is it a binding referendum? No. So they're just going to do what they were going to do anyway? Yeah. Then what the hell point is the use in that? Lip service. Oh, okay. Well, why? Well, to placate you so that you'll vote for us for the next election when we promise that we'll legalize it just like we legalized the last election, and then we'll decry the referendum outcome that we wanted and the legislation that we couldn't pass even though we wanted to, because we have such a massive opposition in Parliament right now because of our flimsy coalition that regardless of how the country answers, the government isn't bound to do it, and even if they were bound to do it, they couldn't pass it anyway because of the opposition. Thank you.
Fuck me sideways. Just give me the strength.
Where's my coffee? Oh, there it is. In January of this year, two bills were put before Parliament to reform the law concerning medicinal cannabis. One was my member's bill, drafted originally by Honourable Julie Ann Genter, who, becoming a Minister of the Crown, could not progress a member's bill, and the other was the government's bill delivering on commitments under the First 100 Days plan. Cannabis will be legalised for medical reasons within 100 days. Anybody remember that? I do. And I did not see it happen, because it's like, what, 300 days out? 200 days out? Or something like that? Not one tiny bit of skerrick of movement on the edge? Oh, okay. The government's bill proposes a criminal defence for people with terminal illness defined in the legislation as 12 months left to live. Okay, cannabis is illegal, unless you're going to die in a year so that you can't enjoy it anyway. Okay, will you give me access to enough cannabis to save my life from my terminal illness so that I don't actually die? Nah! What the hell's the point in that? Lip service. Oh, please, just deliver me. Deliver me some weed. You know, it would be good if you actually had some kind of legislative change that actually was meaningful. But I understand that what you got to do when you're doing this gently, gently totalitarian tiptoe approach is that you don't want to reveal your card all at the same time. You don't just come out and say, hey, let's legalize cannabis because it's never killed anybody in 10,000 years. Why say that? You know, just say, oh, we'll legalize a little bit of medicinal cannabis only for people who are going to die anyway. You know, just start there. And then maybe you'll give it to people a little bit of medicinal cannabis who are already dead. And then progress from there. Who knows what the government's thinking is on this, or if there was any thinking. And delegates powers to the Ministry of Health to create new regulations for medical prescription of cannabis, as well as a licensing scheme for domestic production of local cannabis products. Our Green Members Bill would have created a prescription scheme for those with a defined quality medical condition to cultivate, possession, or use the cannabis plant or products with the support of a registered medical professional. So you can't do it by yourself. You've got to have some kind of doctor involved, you know, which is fair enough, I guess, to a large degree. Like, let's say the doctor was skilled up in cannabis and he says you need a sativa strain, not an indica strain. You need a hybrid, not just a single. You need a this, you need a that, you need a such and such and blah blah blah, right? Because if the person doesn't know already how to do cannabis and things like that, ultimately it's going to be the doctors who wind up educating their particular patients about these things that can be done. The major point of contention that arose around my members' bill was the so deemed grow your own provision. I noted that in Canada and certain states in the USA, they've for a very long time had the ability to grow their own plants for medicinal use, and studies have quelled the moral panic by demonstrating no greater uptake in recreation or amongst young people, as is often the catch cry of moral panics regarding personal production. As that BS article I read out before demonstrated. The reason it was included in this bill was because of the success of those overseas models, because of the guarantee of sustainable supply, and because, quite frankly, this is currently already happening. Wouldn't it be better if it happened with the oversight of a medical health practitioner? No, I don't necessarily think it would be in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously it would be more enhanced if a medical practitioner was saying how to grow your things and that kind of thing, but to be frank, a horticulturalist and a herbalist would be better advisors for that kind of thing, maybe working with a doctor briefly in order to figure out what it is the patient has so that they can come up with a proper plan. You know, imagine that. You give a sick person, here's a proper plan to heal yourself forever. Where you go. Well, how much did that cost me? It's free. Really? Yeah, here's the seeds, bro. But don't they cost anything? No, they're free. Okay. And now you're no longer sick for the rest of your life and in pain. Enjoy. Wouldn't that, you know, that's the simple process. Here's a pamphlet. Here's some seeds. Go and heal yourself. And then you're no longer a problem to the state. All right? Because people who are sick have time on their hands. And that's why a lot of the people who do cannabis submissions and engage in activism are often sick and can't work. People like myself, for example, I have panic attacks before going to job interviews and things like that. So I'm not doing this asking for donations and regular support from the audience because I want to. I'm doing it because I have a physical condition that stops me from being able to have a job. All right? Government or private sector. If I have a boss, I can't do it. My body just starts shaking. I start hyperventilating. Can't do it. If you tell me, Vinny, be at this protest and help these people who are helping humanity to save it from ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery and put 25 hours of your own time into that for no money, I'm like, sure, I can do that. But somebody says, here, Vinny, come in here and do me 2 hours of work and I'll for this amount and we'll give you this amount of money. I start panicking. You know, it's freaky. Just really bad experiences with cops, really bad experiences with employers, and traumatized for life. So this is my life now, ladies and gentlemen, and I hope that it's been a good show for you, our very first YouTube live stream. Now, please, just before this live stream ends, I would like you to put down into the comments if there were any difficulty things. I believe one person said that there was a big blowout on your speakers at certain points because we have the microphone sensitivity up very, very significantly on this. We did a bunch of tests and things like that, so it might just be your speakers or something like that, but it's meant to be very, very loud so that you can listen with your speakers down or loud enough so that you can hear it on your phone. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for watching. I really, really appreciate all of this very, very active chat room here for this our very first American Freedom Radio and Vinny Eastwood show simulcast via YouTube. Folks, go support me at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and check out the links in the description for my Patreon and KiwiBank. If you want to send us $1 a month to help us get the show continued to be produced. Frankly, ladies and gentlemen, I love you very much. We'll catch you again sometime on the Vinny Eastwood Show.com.